I'm the dude. So that's what you call me.
Are you a virgin?
Yeah, not since I was 10.
Are you there, God? It's me, Margaret.
Come out to the coast. We get together, have a few laughs.
Gentlemen, you can't fight in here. This is the war room.
Can I return it if it doesn't fit?
It always fits. Eventually.
Welcome back to Movie Mingle. I'm Caveman.
And I'm Maggie.
And today we're doing our January bonus episode from 1959, Some Like It Hot.
A classic screwball comedy featuring Dreg and Marilyn Monroe. It's a pretty great one.
It is a pretty great one. It's one of only two movies I've seen from Marilyn Monroe.
Boy, you know, come to think of it, I don't think I've watched a lot of her stuff either. I've seen a lot of clips, but I've never watched The 7 Year Itch or any of her other things. So yes, this might be my only Marilyn Monroe movie that I've ever seen.
Yeah, I haven't seen The 7 Year Itch, but a long time ago I watched Gentlemen Prefer Blondes,
which I also haven't seen.
It's been so long.
Why did you choose this movie for January, or just in general? Why? I don't think I ever asked you that when you told me about the list of, you know, specials, bonus episodes.
The reason I chose it specifically for the month of January was because it had the word hot in it, and it's very cold.
It's so cold
in January.
I mean, to be fair, this movie does take place in early February in Chicago, and they go down to Florida, and, you know, I wouldn't mind. I don't want to go to Florida per se, but I want to be warm. So.
Wouldn't mind going somewhere a little more tropical.
Yeah.
A little more sunshine, a little bit more warmth. But
even if it is just San Diego for Florida.
The reason I just chose Some Like It Hot in general is because, you know, a lot of these bonus episodes that we are doing are movies that you and I both like.
Mm-hmm. Movies that don't get talked about a lot anymore, too.
And have just been around for our relationship.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these movies are just those movies where you and I are just like, this one, we gotta watch this one.
Did I make you watch this movie for the first time?
I don't know if you made me. I know my brother's ex-girlfriend was really into it. And I don't know if that's what made me go, oh, I've never seen that one. Let's watch it.
Mm-hmm.
Or if that just got it into our heads, and then one day you were like, hey.
Oh, you've never seen that?
You've never seen that? We need to watch it. You and I really love this movie?
Yeah, I originally watched this movie for the first time with my dad, of course, because he's a big classic movie fan. It was something that he was like, you need to sit down and watch this. And I was probably like, ugh, fine. And then I laughed the entire way through it.
Some Like It Hot was directed by Billy Wilder. He directed films like The 7 Year Itch, and Audrey Hepburn's Sabrina, and 25 other projects.
One hell of a comedic director. He has directed a lot of comedies. You know, he was known for, I mean, he was a big time director in his day.
Some Like It Hot was also written by Billy Wilder, who, some of his writing credits, I don't know a lot of them, but one that comes up a lot is Casino Royale. His kind of a unofficial Bond movie, mm-hmm, with David Niven and Peter Sellers as both playing the Bond character. If you've never seen the Casino Royale by Billy Wilder,
he wrote Sunset Boulevard. He wrote the original Sabrina, or the screenplay for the original Sabrina. Some Like It Hot, of course. The Apartment. Have you ever seen The Apartment?
Nope.
Oh, man, that is if you like Some Like It Hot, you should like The Apartment. It's a great, great film. But he had quite the career in terms of just kind of amazing things that he has done. Yeah, he directed The Apartment as well. It's a really great film. Wins for the Prosecution, Love in the Afternoon. This guy was, you know, he did a lot, in other words. And
he wrote and directed The 7 Year Itch, so this wasn't even his first project with, mm-hmm, Marilyn Monroe.
I know he did not necessarily enjoy directing.
No, and I wonder how she did on The 7 Year Itch to make him
want to go back.
Be okay with doing it all over again, because, There's always stories about the way Marilyn Monroe acted on the set, whether or not, you know, she was late to set, she was inebriated on set. The music was done by Adolf Deutsch. He worked on 80 projects from ranging from the 1920s all the way up to the 60s, which included the original Father of the Bride from 1950, one of the Little Women from the 1949 one, to be specific, and the Maltese Falcon from 1941. Cinematography was done by Charles Lang. He worked on 151 projects from the 20s to the 70s. So
damn,
within 50 years, he had
yeah,
a lot of work under his belt. I have not watched a lot of his stuff, but Some Like It Hot and Sabrina are two projects he worked on, and they are both on his top four on IMDb.
Hmm.
Rotten Tomatoes has Some Like It Hot at a 95% from critics and a 94% from audiences.
That's about right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a very...
It's a very funny...
Simple,
yeah,
straightforward story.
It's a classic funny premise, which has been done time and time and time again, which is, you know, two men are trying to escape, you know, danger, the mob, criminals, mean people that want them dead. And so they hide out in drag with a bunch of women and, you know, men dressing up in women's clothing usually causes chaos and hilarity. Lord knows.
Well, this movie is based off of the 1935 French film Fanfare of Love.
Oh.
I had to look that up because when I was looking at some of the Oscars that this movie was nominated for,
mm-hmm,
it was nominated for Best Adapted Screenplay.
Oh.
And I was like, adapted? Adapted from what?
I mean, like every story ever.
Every story like, is almost adapted from
again,
something.
It's a classic story of men dressing as women to hide.
Sure.
Like, that's
but
been
the
done
original
to death.
The original script for the French film was untraceable.
Mm-hmm.
So a copy of the 1951 German remake, Fanfares of Love, was acquired, and the rights were bought for that script. Billy Wilder and his team started working on the script for Some Like It Hot. Essentially, Wilder, they kept the majority of the original story from the French and German films. Especially the French one, you know, it takes place during the 30s.
Mm-hmm.
So it revolves a lot of the Nazi takeover.
Yeah. Well, is that who the men are hiding from?
No. No. They're not hiding from Nazis. Because the whole mob aspect of the movie was something that Billy Wilder added. That was something that he came up with.
Oh, okay.
The original synopsis of the French film / German film is two struggling male musicians unable to get any work dress as women in order to get work in an all-female band.
Gotcha.
So you take that premise,
yeah,
you add gangsters are looking for them, and
that's why they're dressed in drag and running away. Because what
it's
normal
not...
man in 1950, well, I guess technically the movie takes place in the 20s, so what man in the 20s would do that for any other reason than to save his own life, right?
Work. I mean, when they are struggling male musicians.
Well, yeah, but I mean,
but
like...
the females are, like, really doing well.
Yeah.
Somehow. Like... It's 30, it's 19, I mean,
well, yeah,
it's not America.
Get up there in a skimpy little dress and shake your tits a little bit while you're playing the ukulele and people are going to come see you. You do the same thing as a dude, you know, not going to get as much. You put Marilyn Monroe in the front of your band, people are going to come see it in her mostly nude dresses that she wore.
Man, there was not much to those dresses.
There really wasn't.
Some Like It Hot was made for $3 million, which seems very... small now, but that is $32 million in today's 2020.
Well, there had to be
four,
I know Marilyn herself caused a lot of not reshoots, but a lot of takes and a lot of takes.
A lot of very simple lines that she kept messing
with.
Up. Yeah. 45 plus takes to just say like three words, but she kept getting the order wrong or creating different words. So that gives you a little idea of how much
you know, it's hard to say. I feel like it should be mentioned that the world was not nice to Marilyn Monroe. You know, you deep dive into her life, and this was a woman who was almost too beautiful for her own good and caused a lot of problems for her. You know, she's had a lot of addictions. She had a lot of issues. You know, people were not nice to her. So I can't imagine how that affected her mental health. Even in death, people have been so gross about her. I mean, for God's sakes, you know, her nude photos were in the first ever issue of Playboy, but she did not pose for Playboy. They bought those pictures and posted them, or printed them without her consent. The fact that Hugh Hefner bought the plot, you know, the burial plot next to her so he could spend eternity next to a woman he'd never met is disgusting. The guy that's buried above her instructed his wife to bury him face down so that he could spend his life on top of Marilyn Monroe, or his, you know, his afterlife on top of Marilyn Monroe, which is disgusting. Like, this poor woman. And so we sit here and we talk about, like, yeah, you know, it took her 47 takes to say, you know, it's me, sugar. The woman had problems and nobody was offering to help her. And
all wanted to use her and make money off of her.
And it had to have been hard. But, like, you know, these days she would have had advocates, maybe, one would hope. Back then, like, yeah, she seemingly was all alone in this, and it sucked for her. All of this to say, like, she does a pretty great job. This performance is a great performance, even if it was a giant struggle for her. You know, they managed to put something magical on screen.
And they made some money from it. It made $25 million domestically, which is around $270 million today. So for today's inflation, made for 32, made 270. It did a great job, and
it was a success across the board.
It's a and for every right reason,
for
like
good reason. It's a great movie. Yeah,
I love watching this movie. It makes me laugh every time. I look forward to specific jokes, or, you know, even though I've heard the jokes 1,000 times, it's always fun to hear them again.
Mm-hmm. Should we explain what this movie is about? Because I imagine that, I mean, I don't know how many of our listeners have seen this film, short of the people that we have made watch it.
It's true. This is not something that I think is on everybody's list.
No, it's a comedy from 1959. I watched it for the first time because my dad made me. You watched it for the first time because, you know, somebody else told you it was funny. Like, the point of this podcast is not just to talk about movies that we love and that we've seen, but it's also to talk about movies that we love that we want you to see. So, you know, let's get into, like, the nuts and bolts of Some Like It Hot.
Well, essentially, two musicians. Well, let's start at the very top. This is 1930s Chicago.
Yeah.
During the winter, or at least a pretty brutal snowstorm. This is also the time of
Prohibition,
thank you. Obviously, the Chicago mob is doing well in Chicago with their booze.
And their speakeasies and their whatnots.
So our two main characters, played by Tony Curtis and Jack Lemmon, are musicians in a speakeasy, essentially.
Tony Curtis plays the saxophone. Jack Lemmon plays the upright bass, the string bow. And, you know, they kind of are aware that the speakeasy that they're working in is going to get, you know, raided. And they manage to escape the raid. And all the while, you know, they're poor musicians, you know, they're struggling. Tony Curtis's character is kind of a cad. He's a bit of a sleazeball. In that he's constantly trying to make money easily, so he's betting everything that they have on dogs that are a sure win, even though they're not. Jack Lemmon's just kind of along for the ride, his long-suffering best friend, who is constantly just like, why do I let you talk me into these things? But they eventually end up in a garage where, you know, to get a car from a friend to go to a gig that's 100 miles away, and they happen to witness a St. Valentine's Day-esque massacre of a mob hit, basically. They see one mobster kill a bunch of other mobsters, and they've got to get away from... And then the mobster knows that they're there, and so they've got to run. And their only real option is that an all-female band is looking for a saxophone player and an upright bass.
Just by chance.
To take a trip to Florida to perform. And so they do what the only thing they can do, which is dress and drag, and go along for the ride. Now, of course, along for the ride is one of the band members, Marilyn Monroe, who plays Sugar Cane. And, you know, how do you not instantly fall in love with her? Which is a problem for both men.
Sure, yeah.
And then once they get to Florida, they're, you know, they're supposed to just run off and make a new start in Florida. But Tony Curtis, you know, convinces Jack to stay. And, you know, because he wants to put the moves on Marilyn Monroe. And hilarity ensues. Of course, the mobsters end up coming to the exact same hotel in Florida.
Not just Florida, but the exact same hotel. Of all the hotels,
yes,
this hotel in Florida is hosting the...
It's basically a con. It's a mob con, but it's the convention for lovers of Italian opera.
Yes.
But it's actually a mob get together.
Yeah.
Which cracks me up that even back then, not only were there, you know, like conventions, but the fact that the mob themselves would have a convention under the guise of lovers of Italian opera. That in its own right is a very, very funny gig. And then there's also a great pairing with Daphne, who is the female persona of Jack Lennon's Jack Lemmon's character. I always want to say Jack Lennon instead of Jack Lemmon. And I don't know why, I just do. There's a rich older billionaire who is staying at the hotel, or excuse me, I should say millionaire, staying at the hotel watching all these young, beautiful women, but he's attracted most to Daphne and spends the entire movie trying to woo Daphne to some success, actually. And it's honestly, for me, like, that's where my favorite part of the comedy of this movie comes from, Daphne and her suitor, because I find it a lot funnier than Tony Curtis, who is not only pretending to be Geraldine, I think is her character's name.
Joe is Josephine.
Josephine, yes. No, it was supposed to be Josephine and Geraldine, but it was changed from Josephine to Daphne.
Yeah, Geraldine didn't like Geraldine, yeah. So she said Daphne. So,
yeah, she changed her name to Daphne. So Josephine is all like is becoming best friends with Sugar, and at the same time, Tony Curtis is pretending to be a millionaire, doing a very bad Cary Grant accent too, which cracks me up. Just this terrible Cary Grant impression, and he's trying to woo her, but entirely under false pretenses, right? Like, he's pretending that he has money, which he does not. He manages to, like, get the millionaire off of his yacht and steals away onto it with Sugar for the night. Like, the whole thing is so problematic and cockeyed and so fucking funny. But I do prefer the Daphne and her suitor storyline to Sugar and, you know, and Tony Curtis's. Because it's just, I mean, I guess it's hard to watch this movie these days. It's not, I don't know. But it is weird to watch it with a modern mindset. But, because there's a lot of jokes about, like, groping women, about, you know, it's very much, you see how women were treated not only in the 20s, and 30s, but also in the 50s when this movie was made. And there's a fair amount of, you know, grossness and stuff,
but
that's you could still
make this movie today. It's not...
You could easily, yeah.
Even with the groping, like,
because that's
still
what happened. That was... Tony Curtis is great in this role.
Yeah.
He's... I don't want to call him handsome, because he's handsome in a weird way. You know, I think he was a heartthrob. I would happily look up his IMDb right now, but I've got a cat laying on top of my computer. But, you know, Tony Curtis had a long and storied career. I believe he is the father of Jamie Lee Curtis. He was great. But Jack Lemmon, that motherfucker, was brilliant in everything he did. And I think that a lot of, like, modern millennials kind of know him and Walter Matthau and the shit that they got in together in their older years, the you know, the funny movies they made together. But Jack Lemmon was never not the funniest man in the room.
Like, I love Jack Lemmon so much. Yeah,
he did such great
things. I haven't seen a lot of movies with Tony Curtis. There's a few, I believe. And yes, he... Jamie Lee Curtis is one of six children that Tony Curtis had.
So, Some Like It Hot went on to become a stage play. In fact, they did, I believe there was a musical and there was also a stage play. But Tony Curtis in his late 70s performed in a 2002 stage production of the film, this time cast as Osgood Fielding III, the character originally played by Joe E. Brown. Osgood Fielding III is the millionaire that is in love with Daphne. So Tony Curtis got to play that role, which I would have thoroughly enjoyed, actually. I think that would have been a lot of fun.
I was going to give you another little fun fact.
Okay.
There is a German dubbing of this movie.
Oh, I bet that's a riot.
I bet it is. But George Domala served as the voice for Jack Lemmon's character because it was the same exact character that he played in the Fanfares of Love in 1951.
I would like to watch that. I think that would be fun.
That would be.
So, of course, we love this film, but we're not the only ones. Some Like It Hot is on four different lists of the American Film Institute's top 100 whatevers. In 1998, it was voted number 14 in the AFI's 100 Years, 100 Movies. So they considered it the 14th greatest film up to that point. In 2000, AFI released the list of 100 Years, 100 Laughs. It is number one on that list as the funniest movie. In 2005, they did AFI's 100 Years, 100 Movie Quotes. And Osgood Fielding III's line, well, nobody's perfect, was ranked at number 48.
Oh.
And then in 2007, they released a 10th anniversary edition of 100 Years and 100 Movies. And Some Like It Hot got bumped to number 22. But there you go.
Huh.
This film was inducted in 1989 into the National Film Registry by the Library of Congress. And the Writers Guild of America ranked the film screenplay as the 9th greatest ever written. So, again, this isn't just a movie that we're like, oh, it's funny, you should watch it. This genuinely is one of the greatest Hollywood comedies ever. And it's such a simple premise. Men dress in drag and go hide with a bunch of women. And it is so brilliantly acted by most of them. I mean, Marilyn had her struggles, but, you know, she got out an incredible performance. And it's just really fucking funny. Like, you know, yeah, okay, so some of the jokes are problematic these days, but for its time, you know, and even still, like, there are moments that are hysterical. When all the girls are climbing into Daphne's bunk to have a party at 2 a.m, and there's, like, 14, like, women in this small bunk on a train, and, like, it cuts to the outside of all the bunks lined up and all the curtains are closed, and then you see Daphne's and there's just appendages just sticking out. Josephine, Tony Curtis is desperately trying to find Daphne, and every time he like lifts up a leg, it's not her.
He's like trying to like find
he's trying to find his friend.
Like looking through like thick brush in a jungle, like
it's all just limbs.
Yeah, just limbs and
like the women in this band are bona fide hotties.
Of course they are.
They are all stunning. And so he's just desperately searching through this this big pile of women. And they're all in a, you know, a bunk that's like the size of a sleeping, or, you know, it's the size of a bunk to sleep on a train. It's small. And then because, you know, Daphne can't get a hold of the fact that all these women are in her bed with her, she pulls the emergency brake and they all just go spilling out. Oh, Shit, that this movie is, it's a delightful, charming little romp.
Jack Lemmon did receive a Golden Globe for Best Actor.
Nice.
For musical or comedy. And even Marilyn Monroe won a Golden Globe for Best Actress in a musical or comedy.
It also won Best Motion Picture Musical or Comedy that same year.
Oh, yeah. Best Picture. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Golden Globe. There are a lot of nominations.
Yeah.
I think it won around 11 awards, including one Oscar for Best Costume in a black and white movie.
Those costumes.
There was a time where the Oscars awarded separate awards for black and white and colored film.
So, yeah, in 1959, films were being made in color.
Right.
And one of the reasons Billy Wilder didn't film this movie in color is because the makeup used to make Tony and Jack look like women was so garishly, like, green and ugly that it only looked good on black and white film, basically. Funny. Like he was... To make them look realistically like women, it had to be shot in black and white.
That's really interesting.
Yeah. The dresses, the costumes were, or at least the dresses for Marilyn were done by someone named Ori Kelly, who's the professional name of Ori George Kelly, an Australian-American Hollywood costume designer.
Yeah. Ori Kelly was the one who won the Oscar.
And the dresses that he made for Marilyn are these, like, gorgeous sheer sequin numbers, and those gorgeous heavy breasts of hers are just sitting naturally, and I swear to God there's just enough rhinestones to cover her nipples and nothing else.
That's this
costume is, you know, it doesn't leave much to be desired, and it's also got a back so low, like, so not only is the front incredibly revealing, but also sort of like scantily so, right? But the back of it drops all the way down to like inches from the top of her butt crack. I do not know how this dress stayed on this woman. In fact, it's kind of shocking, but it's gorgeous, this dress. Like, so they're so beautiful. There's a white one and a black one. Actually, I'm looking at a color photo of her in that black dress right now, and like, damn. It is really funny to see color photos of the boys in drag, because they're not great per se, but like you can kind of see why they chose to do it in black and white, because for instance I'm showing Cameron right now a photo of Tony Curtis in boy drag and Jack Lennon in girl drag, and her makeup's a little green.
It doesn't look terrible, though.
No, but I think
it's also very hard to get rid of that stubble.
Yeah.
Man, it looked much better in black and white.
Yes.
There's a lot of stubble on that man.
They should have, drag queens weren't terribly prevalent in 1958, due to many reasons, but, I mean, a little bit of color-correcting concealer, and she would have, and a bit of a chin contour, and she would look great. All I'm saying is that, like, Raven from RuPaul's Drag Race could have made both of these bitches look stunning, but she wasn't around.
She wasn't around.
Yeah.
Jack Lemmon was nominated for an Oscar for Best Actor, but lost to Charlton Heston for Ben-Hur. Even Billy Wilder was nominated for Best Director, but it went to William Wyler for Ben-Hur. Billy Wilder and I.L. Diamond were also nominated for Best Adapted Screenplay, but it went to Room at the Top, which I'm not familiar with. Charles Lang was nominated for Best Cinematography for a black and white film, and also Art Direction was also for a black and white film, was also nominated. They both lost to The Diary of Anne Frank.
Ooh.
Yeah, tough. Tough competition.
Holocaust movies almost always get it.
Yeah, yeah. Two guys in drag comedy.
Yes, is not going to get it.
gonna get an Oscar over a Holocaust movie.
Man, I'm going through the IMDb photos of Some Like It Hot, and there's a lot of like behind the scenes stuff, and there's a lot of production stills. As hard as this movie was to make, I bet it was a fucking hoot to make as well. I've got to imagine they had some fun with it, because they just look like they're having the time of their lives. Not too long ago, I found like a BuzzFeed article, honey, where it was like, you know, 50 photos of old Hollywood you've never seen that'll give you a different perspective or what the fuck ever. You know, it's just one of those listicles, right? But it included two color photos of Some Like It Hot that I'd never seen before. And so I saved them on my phone knowing that we were going to do this.
Oh.
And I would like them to be used for our own promotion. But, for instance, I'm going to hand you my phone now. There's a picture and of Jack and Tony in drag.
Mm-hmm.
And that might have been the first time I've ever seen a picture of them in color in drag. And I giggled so hard. Like, they're just such masculine dudes. And, you know, again, going back to my comment earlier, like, they did not have drag queens out there helping them pad, helping them... You know, if this movie was done today, these guys would look like women versus just a couple of dudes with a dress on, some really bad foundation, and a bit of slapdash lipstick. But it's like they're so convincing in how they act, too. And their voices and everything. Like, it's just the fact that Osgood III could think that Daphne was a real woman. Anyways, it just made me laugh, and I was like, well, I've got to save that for our own Some Like It Hot video.
Yeah, we'll post them on Instagram when it comes time for that.
Although this film takes place in Florida, it was filmed at the famous Coronado Hotel down in San Diego. That iconic building that's like, you know, octagonal shape and like goes up. You've seen it.
It's octagonal and goes up.
I don't know what to say with this one. It's hard because it's like we're sitting here being like, this movie's really funny. Watch it.
What's your favorite part of this movie?
Probably the smash cuts of the two dates. The two dates that the two men are on. You know, Daphne is out with Osgood. Tony Curtis is out with Sugar Cane. Like, you know, one of the dates is romantic and just filled with lies, right? I mean, Tony Curtis is trying so hard to convince Marilyn that he's got money and that he feels nothing for her when she kisses him. He's got no sensation for love after the death of his first fiance. And so she's doing everything she can to try to make him feel something again, which is basically just a lot of kissing, you know, but it is romantic and it's sort of sweet, even though he's just lying through his teeth to her. But then it cuts to Daphne and Osgood dancing in like a Spanish cafe or Spanish dance ballroom, just doing the tango back and forth. And she keeps accidentally leading him. And he keeps having to remind her.
Daphne, You're leading again.
Sorry.
And then they get engaged, which is also very funny that, you know, Osgood, he's so in love with her. And he's already been married like 4 or 5 times. And they all get ran off by his mother, you know. But he loves Daphne so much that he proposes to her on the spot. So that's my favorite scene. And then, of course, the end when they're all on the boat. But what about you, Caveman?
The bit with Daphne in her bunk when all the girls are trying to make a cocktail, essentially.
Yeah, it's prohibition. But like, oh, you've got whiskey. I've got vermouth.
Yeah. Let's get a hot water bottle and make a cocktail. Let's get some ice.
Yeah.
Shake it up. Yeah, everything with Osgood is funny. The guy just wants
to be loved.
He just wants to be loved, and
but he falls for the wrong woman.
Eh, nobody's perfect.
Should we spoil that for the folks? The last scene of this film is probably why it's so... I mean, it's a really funny film up to that point. But the last scene is Daphne trying to convince Osgood that he doesn't want to marry her.
Osgood, I'm going to level with you. We can't get married at all.
Why not?
Well, in the first place, I'm not a natural blonde.
Doesn't matter.
I smoke.
I don't care.
I can never have children.
We can adopt some.
But you don't understand, Osgood. I'm a man.
Well, nobody's perfect.
Honestly, I would like to think that maybe they go off and have some sort of really weird, long-standing relationship, you know, together. I'd like to think that Osgood and Daphne do somehow end up falling in love and spending the rest of their lives together. But Christ, like, it just ends on such a banger of a joke. And, you know, and then it just cuts to black, as you know, films did back then, right? And there weren't credits to play at the beginning. And I have to imagine that watching that in theater for the first time, people had to have been howling with laughter.
Yeah, it's funny, it's sweet, it's very, you know, PG. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really...
It is very PG.
It's, yeah, other than, you know, it's today's time.
Yeah, by today's standard. I mean, Osgood does, you know, grope Daphne in the elevator the first time he meets her. And she's,
or that bellhop who's just insistent on...
The bellhop who is so... That is worrisome to me, even for then. There's this, like, young bellhop who's just... And it's not just that he's a young bellhop who's obsessed with Josephine, but he's also a good 2 feet shorter than her. And so he's just staring up at this big woman like, wowza. And he keeps, like, letting himself into her room because he has the key. That's uncomfortable, even for her back then. Although, you know, he only ever ended up being, like, a, you know, a good joke. But, you know, it's just a good film. What do you say about Some Like It Hot? Like, it's so funny.
Well, speaking of Some Like It Hot, it is funny that that title comes from just a single line when I believe Tony Curtis is in his Shell Oil persona. And
his shell drag.
And he's asking Sugar what she does. And she's like, oh, you know, I play ukulele. And that she likes playing jazz. And his response was...
Oh, well, I guess Some Like It Hot. I personally prefer classical music.
And that's the moment where you're just like, no, title!
Title!
They did it.
I know. It is an interesting, like, I don't know what else they would have called this film, but...
They could have... I mean, I know they added, obviously, some things that weren't in the original... Mm-hmm. Movie, but they probably could have gotten away with just an... I mean, you don't have to call it Fanfare of Love, but...
No. Joe E. Brown, and that's not Joey, it is Joe, middle initial E. Brown, was the actor who played Osgood Fielding III, so the love interest of Daphne. And he's also in It's a Mad, 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 Mad World.
Of course he is.
Yeah. Which is my favorite old-timey comedy of all time, which I don't think is on the list for...
No, Mad World bonus episode.
Well, then let's talk about that for a second. Let's go off on a little tangent. It's Mad, 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 Mad World came out in 1963, and everyone who was anyone at the time that that movie was made has a part or a cameo in this film. It is 3 hours and 30 minutes long.
Which is insane for a comedy.
Insane for a comedy, especially insane for a comedy in 1963. Yeah. It has an intermission. Caveman's going to see The Brutalist soon, and he's very excited to see that film. And
which is also 3.5 hours long.
And has an intermission.
And has an intermission.
When we watched the Golden Globes, the director was like, you know, let the directors have their own cut, you know, their final say on the cut, yada, yada. Which makes sense, but the fact that, like, in 1963, Stanley Kramer got away with making a 3.5-hour-long movie about a group of motorists who witness a car crash in the California desert, and after the driver's dying words indicate the location of a hidden stash of money, they turn against each other in a race across the state to get to it. This movie is fucking joke for joke, minute for minute, just packed with funny. It has, and again, anybody who was famous leading up to like 1962,
I mean, you got
when this film was made.
Spencer Tracy, mm-hmm. Milton Berle, Ethel Merman, Mickey Rooney, Sid Caesar, Buddy Hackett.
Dick Shawn, who, Sylvester Marcus is probably my favorite character in the whole fucking thing. Terry Thomas, who is, you know, if you imagine a proper stereotyped British actor from the 60s with that sort of voice and the gap in his teeth, that's Terry Thomas. Jonathan Winters. Yeah. When Jonathan Winters destroys that entire gas station with the sheer force of his body, it's incredible. As we mentioned, Joey Brown, the Three Stooges are in it. Jerry Lewis is in it. Like, it's just stacked with cameos and comedy. And it's a favorite movie of my father's. In fact, it might be my father's favorite movie. And it's a film that he made us watch constantly growing up. And, you know, my family to this day will make jokes about something being under a giant W. Just other dumb references. So personally, for me, that's my favorite old Hollywood classic comedy. Would you say that Some Like It Hot is yours? Or is there, like, another classic, like, Hollywood comedy that you would want?
Comedy?
Yeah.
Like, purposely?
Or just, I guess, favorite old-timey movie in general.
I mean, I do love The Thin Man.
Those are comedies, and those are great. I mean, they're detective comedies.
Detective comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love William Powell
and Morna Loy and The Thin Man, who are fucking, their chemistry is on par with, like, Ryan Gosling's and Emma Stone. Like, it is so palpable, those two. And so chic.
Oh, man. Can we get a Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone Thin Man movie where they're both just drunk and on vacation
with their little dog with their Asta. Little
dog Asta and have to solve
a mystery, a murder mystery. Oh, only if it can be as goofy as The Nice Guys, but also, like, I want it to be wholesome in the way that movies had to be back then during the coded era, because I could see if they wanted to remake The Thin Man, they'd put way too much modern bullshit into it, and some of the charm of that film is, you know, how wholesome it was. I will also say there's a really wonderful film called The Ghost and Mrs. Muir about a widow and her young daughter who move into this, like, gorgeous, windswept, you know, half, basically, like, mansion somewhere in the East Coast, on the beach, and the house comes with the ghost of a surly sea captain. And he and the widow slowly fall in love with each other. That is, oh my god, that's one of my favorite films of all time. I'm a really big sucker for, like, old Hollywood-style romances. So, An Affair to Remember, I fucking love that movie. Roman Holiday, I'm always trying to get you to watch Roman Holiday, and you're always like,
meh. We have watched it before.
Yeah, and let's watch it again, because it's been a minute, and it's perfect. Audrey Hepburn and Gregory Peck are so good together. And also, Gregory Peck was so fucking hot. That man was a smoke show. And in that movie especially, he's just dripping with charisma. And he could be dripping with my own charisma.
So, Maggie, what would you give?
You're like, let's get this over with.
What would you give Some Like It Hot out of 5 stars?
Honestly, I want to give it 5 stars or do I want to give it 4.5? My gut says that it's a 5-star film. That for being made coming out in 1959, for the fact that it is, you know, heralded as one of the greatest comedies of all time, you know, for its humor, for its heart, for everything. Yeah, I'm giving this movie 5 stars. What about you, K-Man?
Yeah, I was actually thinking about the same thing. I was like, all right, I'll give it a 4.5 because does it deserve a 5?
Yeah.
You know, it's not like You know, it's not like our five stars are such a precious thing that nothing's allowed to
ever be a five star. We throw them out like they're candy.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
We hang around like the 3.5 to 4.5 range most of the time. But yeah, this movie is beloved and considered one of the best, not just for comedy, but just films in general.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for better or worse, even in 2024, I think the movie still holds up as a really good quality movie. So yeah, I give it 5 stars.
Yeah, it's a great film and it's definitely worth watching. I think that, I don't know how much younger people these days are interested in old Hollywood films. And, you know, they're classics for a reason and they're definitely worth watching. You know, not every film that was made back then is great. You can find some really surprisingly great little nuggets in classic films. And, you know, if you like film, you've got to understand its history, how the Hollywood machine is what it is today, even. Check out TCM. Check out some old Hollywood stuff. Watch some Like It Hot. And if you've got 3.5 hours, watch It's a Mad, 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 Mad World, preferably with me so I can explain everybody who's in that movie and what else they've done.
Time will fly by. It's a long movie, and there are moments where you're just like, this is a long movie. Yeah. But then by the end of it, you're like, hey, this actually, that in the end, that didn't feel like 3.5 hours.
I mean, it's almost basically like in real time from the California desert down to Santa Rosita.
It is.
So, but yeah, definitely check out old Hollywood films because they're great, guys, and we love them.
And we would like to do more in the future. So, Maggie.
Yes, Caveman.
I have 2 questions for you.
Hit it.
So what you paint, what you do belongs to you. You don't need to copy anything.
I don't copy.
Why don't you paint just what's in your mind, what your brain sees?
Was that Willem Dafoe?
It is Willem Dafoe that he was talking to.
That's that from that weird Van Gogh movie that Dafoe did that I haven't seen. Which, how have I not seen a movie about Van Gogh with Oscar Willem Isaac Dafoe, and Willem Dafoe?
Especially Willem Dafoe. Like,
crazy.
Yeah.
Van Gogh, Dafoe, Oscar Isaac. Yeah, how do I not... So, I was thinking about this because if you listen to our Shrek episode... you heard me talk about the Card Counter, whatever that movie was called, with Oscar Isaac. And there's some of his movies that I see trailers for and I go, that looks bad. I'm not going to watch that, even though he's in it and I love him. I'm not going to waste my time. Today, I watched a trailer for the upcoming King of Kings, which is a 3D animated film about the life of Jesus that Oscar Isaac plays Jesus Christ in.
Wow.
And Jesus Christ, does it look bad?
Oh, of course.
The animation style is horrendous. And
I can only imagine.
Like, it is so bad. But listen to this cast list, right? Kenneth Branagh, Oscar Isaac, Pierce Brosnan, Ben Kingsley, Emma Thurman, Mark Hamill, Forrest Whitaker. That is an insane cast list to get those 7 people... in anything. Like, I would die to see those 7 people in a movie together that wasn't this.
Right.
I didn't recognize the countries of origin. South Korea. Okay, Angel Studios. Which don't know what they are.
They put on these kind of things.
Yeah. Blue Harbor Entertainment and Giant Step Studios. And MoFak Animation. I have not heard of any of these people. How did these people...
Money.
How did they get the money?
They're called...
Well, yeah, church followers. People fucking... but like...
Instead of giving money to you know, the sick and the poor and the dying.
They throw it at movie studios to tell yet another...
Which is why they have a tax break so that they can help feed...
God, we should tax
hungry.
Churches.
Anyways,
so nonetheless, my whole point is that this movie looks so bad that despite Oscar Isaac playing our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, I will not be watching it. Because
it's good to know.
And this
everybody
cast,
was holding their breath,
this cast is wasted on this film. You know what I would give to see Kenneth Branagh and Oscar Isaac on screen together? So much money. But not for this. Absolutely not. But anyways, back to the question at hand.
First question.
Yes. Hit it.
Would the presence of Oscar Isaac have made some Like It Hot a better movie?
No. No, I don't think you could have perfected this version of this film. So no. Would I like to see a remake with Oscar Isaac in it? Absolutely.
A remake, I think, would be fun.
Yeah, but I don't think that if you just suddenly put Oscar Isaac, like, into this film that came out in 1959, it would have changed anything for me.
By the way, if anybody's wondering, this...
So what you paint, what you do, belongs to you. You don't need to copy anything.
I don't copy.
Why don't you paint just what's in your mind, what your brain sees?
Just so everybody knows, it's a movie called At Eternity's Gate from 2018.
How did I not fucking watch this movie?
And if anything, like, even if Oscar Isaac wasn't in it, I'm intrigued because Willem Dafoe is playing Van Gogh, and Theo Van Gogh, which I'm guessing is a son?
His brother, I think.
Brother?
Yeah.
Is played by Rupert Friend.
Ooh. I do love a good Rupert Friend. It's also very, like, beautifully, like, isn't it, like, kind of animated in the style?
Yeah, like, they're showing, there's a scene where Van Gogh is wearing some, there's a lot of moments where Van Gogh's wearing a lot of clothes that he shows himself wearing in his paintings. So that's very visually appealing. Mads Mikkelsen also is in this movie.
Oh, he is so hot.
I think At Eternity's Gate might be a movie that you and I watch.
God, it's only got a 6.9 on IMDb.
Eh, that's good enough.
Yeah.
That's above average.
Christ. I just saw what Oscar looks like in this movie, and Jesus Christ. Duh. Our Lord and Savior. Oh, boy.
So anyway, Maggie, second question.
Yes. Who would he play?
Which character would Oscar Isaac play? And you can have Oscar Isaac be any age, play any character. I know he wasn't born.
No.
Or around in the late 50s.
That's not my qualms. It's just what character would I like to see him play, right? I don't think that he would necessarily, even with the best makeup artist, I don't think he would look good as a woman. So I couldn't imagine him as Josephine or Daphne. So I'm torn between him playing the Osgood Fielding III role, because I think he would have so much fun at that. He would have so much fun in that role, and I would love to see him with that. Or I think that he would be fun as Mr. Beanstalk, the band manager of Sweet Sue and Her Society Syncopators. Sweet Sue and Her Society Syncopators, who is the guy that travels around with the band and helps kind of not only helps keep things on track, but also has everything stolen from him by Joe in order to put on the persona of the Shell Oil Jr. This movie it's got a big cast because there's a lot of, like, you know, everybody in the band and, you know, the band manager. Robin, you bite me one more time. I swear to God, I'm feeding you to that bald eagle I saw earlier. You'd make such a good meal. Yes, you would. I think that Oscar as Osgood would be great. He would have so much fun in that role.
I think he'd be really good as Spats.
He would be pretty good as Spats, too. Spats is the mob boss who's coming after them.
I think he'd be a good mob boss, kind of.
Yeah. That energy. I mean, he's done it a couple of times. I mean, A Most Violent Year is basically a mob movie. And that has been January's bonus episode of Movie Mingle on Some Like It Hot, and we hope that you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed bringing it to you. Again, check out classic films, guys, if you haven't. I mean, come to us if you want a good list of, like, old films to watch. We will throw some great ones your way. There are a lot of really wonderful old Hollywood black and white films out there, old screwball comedies, old, you know, romances that'll break your heart, dramas that'll devastate you. Like, there's some great films out there. Yeah, definitely, you know, if you're interested at all in movies, which I'd like to think you are if you're listening to this silly little podcast, you really should check out some of the old classics, because they were there for a reason. Next week, we've got Seven coming out, which I am not excited for, but will be a part of nonetheless. So join us on Wednesday and look forward to that. That's going to be an interesting episode. And yeah, you can always find us on Instagram, Threads, and Letterboxd at Movie Mingle Pod. You can find us on YouTube at Movie Mingle Podcast, and write us all your thoughts and concerns and maybe wants for classic movies to watch at moviemingle@gmail.com. Feel free to rate and review our silly little show on whatever your podcast platform of choice is. 5 stars or whatever you feel that we deserve. And tell people about us, because we're fun and we want more people to have fun with us. Until then, please take care of yourselves. especially in this kind of insane start to 2025. Of course, our thoughts and hearts are broken for those affected by those awful fires in Southern California. You know, as two Southern Californians, it's really hard to watch your beloved home state burn from thousands of miles away. It hurts. So, you know, of course, we're thinking about everybody down there. And yeah, please just take care of yourself and stay safe out there in this big, wide, wacky world of ours. And we will see you next time. But until then, remember, nobody's perfect. And go mingle. Bye.
Are you an effective team?
We are an effective team.
Let them fight.
How did you just do that?
I'm a really good lawyer.
Here on Caladan, we've ruled by air power and sea power. On Arrakis, we need to cultivate desert power.
Welcome, Mr. Beach. What's that bomb? I'm a little confused.
Oh, we wouldn't want that, would we?
I don't
want
to brag, but I will. I was in the Avengers.
The Avengers?
Yeah.
That's great. Thank you. What is that?
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
Toga, 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 toga.